Welcome to an open house meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California on June 19th, 2013.
Well, hello everybody. This is John. I don't actually have anything to say this morning. I've been working the last couple of days on putting together the new Avaaz petition, and I don't know. Maybe some of you here have been involved in that project, and if you are, you'll hear about it in the grassroots hip chat room. But I don't have anything to say, except I'm happy to be here with you, and if you want to speak to me or if something occurs to me, I'll certainly speak up. But this is your time. If there's something you'd like to speak to me about, just raise your hand and we can see what we can do with it. Good to be here. I see there's a couple of people who just arrived. I'm just here to talk to you. Anything you want to talk about, we can talk about. I have nothing on my mind this morning, so it's pretty much up to you. If you want to speak, raise your hand, and we can talk about whatever you want to talk about. Good to see you here.
What really got me started with this process, John, was when I got your book, Look at Yourself. I think it was published, 2007 or 2010. Anyway, the words on the back of that book, indicating that if you take that in initial look, and then if you let the process continue, that you will arrive at a place where fear doesn't have, well, I forget quite how you put it, but the beast pretty well dies. However, on the other side of that, and I guess I'm just looking for a little clarification in my own consciousness. On the other side of that, it also seems to me, from various things that have been said, and that you never get sort of a place where the process, you know, it really is where fear really is. When fear comes up, it just doesn't carry any weight. Or do you come to that place? Anything you could say on that would be helpful.
Okay, I'll try. First of all, that book was published in 2011, and most of it is taken from the transcripts of the 2007 retreat. Now, here's the thing, that it's one of the, I'm fond of saying that there's no doctrine here. But what that means is that there's no doctrine here, and that what's actually occurring here is an uncovering of things over time that's taking place in the conversations that have been going on between me and all the people that have been kind enough to spend time with me for 14 years now. So that the 2007 retreat represented a time, it was a turning point in our work. It was a turning point where it began to become clear to us that we didn't belong in the realm of spiritual teaching or spiritual aspiration. It was an important turning point for us. My ability to communicate clearly what I actually saw to be the case as a result of those conversations was still quite limited. and still quite circumscribed to a certain extent by persistent spiritual language, spiritual ways of communicating. So the book Look at Yourself is not by any means the end of the story as to the development of our understanding of what we've happened upon here. This is not a doctrine. This is not it's not a doctrine. So my ability to speak about the fear and the way in which the process unfolds in 2007 was considerably smaller than my ability to do so now, because of the conversations that I have had with all of you folks over the 6 or 7 years since that retreat. So anyone who's interested in what I see to be the case in the matter of the looking and in the matter of the freeing of human life from the effects of the fear, Christopher, stayed up with it. Well, you just kind of have to stay up with the conversation as it's unfolding. As far as the thing about, I have said and I'll continue to say, and the reason I continue to say this is because there is a persistent, what I see to be a persistent and grave misunderstanding of the true significance and nature of being alive as a human being. And that persistent misunderstanding comes in the form that there will come a time when nothing will trouble me anymore. There will come a time when I see everything clearly. There will come a time when there will be no difficulty in my life, when I'll have no difficulty in understanding what to do, and that, in fact, there will come a time when I really won't have to pay attention to much of anything, because nothing will trouble me anymore, because nothing will call forth in me a need for a response. Well, it turns out, in my understanding and in what I've seen from other people over all of these years, it turns out that actually it is the unpredictable and complicated unfolding of the life itself. It is in that unfolding that doesn't ever come to an end. It is in that unfolding that satisfaction can be found in human life as a human being. So when I say you'll never be done, I don't mean that you'll never be satisfied. You will be satisfied. You are satisfied, actually, no matter what opinions to the contrary may appear in the form of thought and so forth. So the deal is this. When you look, the context of fear, which has been itself and so far as I know for everybody, that context is pretty much beneath the level of conscious awareness. The context of fear, that underlying assumption that there's something wrong here, that there's something wrong with life or there's something wrong with me, that goes right away. But the effects of that context over a lifetime, just like anything else in the real world, nothing happens instantaneously. And the effects of that context, which consist in the psychology of the mind, the psychological structure of the mind, those effects of it, what the fear has given rise to, the context fear has given rise to, those things take time. It's kind of a regeneration of the whole psychology of the mind, and it doesn't happen in an instant. But that, too, turns out to be quite interesting and not threatening and nothing that we need to concern ourselves about. It's part of the overall newly evolving relationship with life and so forth and so on that's taking place after the context goes. Fear remains. I mean, non-neurotic fear is a survival mechanism, and it certainly comes from time to time. Many of the old misunderstandings about things persist for quite a while too, but in the end they all go. And even before they go, it becomes apparent that they too are a part of the life, the engagement with which is the source of satisfaction for human beings. I don't know if that's helpful, but that's best I can do this morning. Christopher.
Yeah. Oh yes, that's very, very helpful, John. Seems to me that well, I don't know, I've been doing this process something like a year and a half, but another facet that it seems to really, really help me is I think I'm becoming more this will sound kind of almost stupid, but more interested in life, more.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, more and yeah. And more.
See, the fear, the context of fear, denied us the idea that there was anything. They denied us the idea that there was anything satisfying about life whatsoever, unless nothing was happening there. Because the context of fear denied us the possibility of understanding the deep interest in the way life actually unfolds without regard to anything else, just the engagement with it, the engagement with life. It's endlessly interesting. So when it goes, that interest begins to draw our attention.
Going on with that, John, I think more I can sort of see more to the depth of a person, the real the real depth, and maybe there's more empathy, like genuine empathy for other people who, some of whom may be in a lot of trouble. And I have a friend now, he just wrote me yesterday. He helps me with my blog, but he was actually on his way to hospital, very concerned that some severe headaches might be an aneurysm or something serious, and I definitely could feel, feel something of what was going on, and I'm glad that I can feel that I have more capability to feel that than perhaps, well, for sure than I did say even 5-6 years ago. So that's another well, that is an important piece of it, I think, isn't it?
It's an extremely important piece of it. It is the uncovering of the natural the natural presence of what's called compassion, which is not a sweet thing or a loving thing. Compassion is the inability to wall yourself off from the suffering of others, and it is the opening up of the recognition of the commonality of human experience, that and it is so common that I am certain in my own experience that we actually do have the indirect experience of others' confusion and fearfulness and misery. And that's what, and it's that aspect of it that leads some of us who are perhaps more sensitive than others to want to withdraw from human engagement and go somewhere where they can live their lives quietly and in peace, not constantly assaulted by the shared misery of others. But it's very important, and the truth of the matter is that when you take that into an objective perspective on it, the fact of the matter is that we really are all in this together. The fact of the matter is that it is the product of the actions and relationships and points of view and attitudes of the entire human community that has led us to the strait that we are in now, where, you know, it's things aren't looking real good for us now in practical and objective terms. And that leads to that's what leads us to the determination to see if we cannot bring this simple thing to everybody, because it is so simple, because it doesn't require anything, because it doesn't require giving up or taking on anything, because it just requires this one simple act. And once the act is done, we know what the outcome will look like in general terms. And so anyway, it's compassion. And you're afflicted with it. Okay?
Yeah, thanks, John. I won't take up any more time, but thank you very much.
Thank you, Christopher. It's good to have you here. Okay, my understanding is that the next person is Alan. No? Jonathan, Carla tells me. Jonathan.
Hi, John.
Hi, Jonathan. Good to see you here.
Yeah, it's good to tune in again. Lately I've been seeing things as either largely conceptual or non-conceptual. Is paying attention to the non-conceptual a beneficial practice?
The beneficial practice, the only beneficial practice that I am certain of is the practice of without aggression, the practice of when attention is captured by negativity or states that are unwelcome, that when attention is captured by those things, to see that there is a sensory component to what is perceived to be the problem, and there is a perceptual component which takes the form of thoughts or underlying attitudes and so forth that tells us what the nature of the problem is. When we are caught in some thing of misery, what we generally attend to is the perceptual component of it, which is the thoughts about it. What I see to be the most useful practice that can be taken on is the practice of when that occurs, and the time will come when it can be done without requiring it to be a negative experience, just for the fun of it, or for the skillfulness of it. But when attention is captured by some negative experience, and it occurs to you that has happened, that the best thing to do is just without any aggression whatsoever, deliberately move your attention from the thoughts about the sensation momentarily to the sensation itself, just to look at it for a second, and then back to something grounded and not physical, like the feeling of the breath, the breathing. And what that does, and the reason that I think that that's beneficial, and that's the practice that I recommend, for I do it myself still. The reason I recommend it is because not only does it defang the experiences that we have taken to be so important and because of their negativity, not only does it defang that, but much more importantly, it gives us an opportunity to develop new skill in determining what we put our attention on, and skillfulness in being able actually to move our attention to what we want to attend to and decline to attend to things that don't need our attention. And since the movement of our attention seems to me to be pretty much the only only thing we can do by will alone to move our attention, that the development of being skillful in that by the means of that practice makes us ever more skillful and ever more satisfied by our engagement with our lives. Is that anything like what you're talking about?
Absolutely. I definitely agree with you. And it's something I've been trying to practice. Well, I've been practicing the redirection from fear onto something more useful, whether my breath or something else. I've been practicing that for a while now, and it's definitely added a lot of richness to being able to adapt to life's circumstances.
Yeah, right. Very good. Okay?
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan. So now I suppose it must be Alan, right? Hi, Alan. Okay, I guess Alan has trouble with sound, so I don't know if you can hear me, but if you can, see if you can figure out what to do about your sound and raise your hand again when you accomplish that, okay? Don, in the meantime, Don?
Hi, John. Today I woke up with a sense what we're talking about, to continue what that gentleman was saying, Christopher, before that. I woke up with a sense of purposelessness, like a sense of what does it all mean? What is it worth? You know, when you say touch that feeling and then move on, can you elaborate on what? I can't find any specific thing that was bothering me. In other words, I didn't wake up and say, oh, my right knee hurts. Let me, you know what I'm saying? I can't.
Listen, Don. Here's the deal.
Always listen. Go ahead.
Here's the deal.
I love
that. If you have thoughts that trouble you, if there are thoughts in your mind that trouble you, the reason for those thoughts are not the things that are troubling. The reason for those thoughts is because there's some sensational, and it may be not very sensational at all, but some sensory feeling state present that the psychology has interpreted to be something that shouldn't be here, and is now considering its options and talking about it and wishing it would go away and all that stuff. Those thoughts are the perception of the problem. That's what those thoughts are. They're a perception of the problem. But they would not be there were it not for the fact that there was some feeling state behind them, which doesn't have to be very strong, but some feeling state behind them that they have, that has triggered that thought response because it was of the kind of feeling that has in the past been defined to be not welcome here. Okay. So there's the thought and there's the feeling state that the thought is about. What I am suggesting that you do is that you notice that you are looking at the thought. Just notice that's happening without in any way you want to do it, but it's just a simple little thing. It's like me noticing, oh yes, I'm talking to Don and I can hear myself in my own head. Just notice the thought, notice that it's there, and then look for what the thought is talking about. What exactly is the feeling that the thought is complaining about? And if it's not there, that's perfectly okay. If it is there, look at it just for a second, just to get the feel of what it's like to be alive. Just look at it for a second and then move to something safe, like the feel of your breath coming in and out of your body. But the thought is about something. It is that something that I am suggesting that you briefly look at on the way to the breath. But if you just get to the breath, that's helpful too. Okay?
Yeah, fair enough. It's more an habitual thing. If I do almost anything other than stay with that feeling, if I do anything other than indulge it, it seems to help.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting that you indulge it.
No,
I'm
I understand.
That you look at it without prejudice. Just look at it for a second.
Sometimes
and look away from it.
Sometimes it's hard.
And that educates you, not in the higher levels of thought and so forth, but that educates you on a primal level to the fact that there's no danger in moving your attention away from thoughts, and there's no danger in looking at feelings that thoughts are trying to persuade you are bad, and there's no danger in looking away from them either. And what is underlying the whole process there is the growing skill at using the power you have to move your attention from one thing to another based on what you want to do rather than the knee-jerk reaction that causes attention to go to that thought. You follow that?
I do, and that's a great way of putting it. It really is knee-jerk. It happens before I even notice it.
Right, right. And
it's
you're
so,
lucky when
so
you notice
habitually,
it.
It's so habitually... Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. My tendency has always been to try to fight it with willpower or figure it out. That doesn't work.
No, don't work.
Doesn't
this
work
works.
Good
this
enough.
Works. And it doesn't work by making those things go away, although... You know, in many cases it does have that effect. But that's not the reason it works. It works because it reveals to you the actual nature of your relationship with these occurrences within your own life.
Fair enough.
Okay?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Thanks, John.
Very good. Thank you very much, Don. Good to
okay.
have you here.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay. Okay, we've got another 20 minutes, I guess, and anybody wants to talk, I'm happy to talk with you, and if not, I'll just sit here and enjoy the time here. Just raise your hand if you want to say anything. Okay, I just have a little bit that I want to say about something, and then we can probably just call it a day here. I see there's a few people here who are in the grassroots group. You guys probably remember the business about the Avaaz petition a while back before all of the more mundane problems began to pile up on us, and that we were getting ready to create and launch a new Avaaz petition to replace the one that that was started prior to was started back in April, I think. And we talked about that a lot in the Hip Chat room and so forth. And if you were a party to that, you have some idea of what I'm talking about. Well, we have now. Carl and I have now. Completed a redraft of the petition, and the why it is important section of the Avaaz interface. And within the next hour or two, I am going to upload those documents to the Grassroots Room in HipChat, address everybody, and I would be grateful if you would take a look at them and see if you could see anything wrong with them or anything that could be improved about them. And then, of course, we're going to try to get everybody we can possibly get to go to the new petition and sign it. So watch out for that in the Grassroots Room. If those of you who are there would do so, I'd be grateful. And let us know what you think of the new petition. We want to get it online like tomorrow. We're still looking for a graphic, but we want to get it online tomorrow, get it up and running, and so that we can move on to other projects that we're trying to get running. So that's it. I'm going to go now, and this was a good time this morning. It was very useful to me, the conversations that we had here. So thank you so much for being here, and thank you for paying attention, and thank you for being a part of this. I just don't know how to characterize this thing that we're about here. But it's pretty exciting.
You just listened to an open house meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California, on June 19, 2013. Live recordings, visit our podcast at www.justoneloop.org.